Prepare yourself. Big News Wednesday approaches. Okay, everybody, we've got a Big News Wednesday. We do not have a J.R. Jackson. He is taking some well-deserved time off, but Mondale Robinson returns. Mondale, it's great to have you here.
It's always a pleasure to be beside you, bro.
Great to have you here. We do have a lot of news. Usually starting on Monday and into Tuesday, we start to put out calls requesting that people make big news so that we can deliver for Wednesday, and those calls were received. And so we've got some good stuff to talk about today. More corruption in the Supreme Court, of all places. We're shocked about this, shocked, both shocked and chagrined. So we're gonna be talking about that. There's a new slur. You will be in trouble if you use on Twitter. We're gonna be breaking that down. All that in the first hour, and then coming up in the aftermath, how removing AM radios from cars is anti-conservative bias or something, and should corporations be allowed to vote like directly in elections? The answer won't surprise you, but there are some people trying to do it anyway. So we're gonna be talking about that, and it should be a lot of fun. Along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing this stream, that would be great so that people know we're live, they can join in on the conversation. And if you wanna reach out to Mondale or myself with any comments, tweets, super chats, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Mondale, are you ready to start the show?
Let's get busy.
Okay, let's do this thing. Donald Trump throws out a lot of wild positions, statements, and in some cases policies. And even he can't seem to keep track of them all. Take a look at him being reminded of a particularly bloodthirsty policy of his live on TV right here.
I focused on nonviolent crime. As an example, a woman who you know very well was in jail. She had 24 more years to serve. She served for 22 years. She had
24. Alice Johnson.
Alice.
She was in the Super Bowl.
High quality. Oh, yeah. I said, how many years? And she was on a telephone call and they were involved in selling marijuana, mostly marijuana. And she got like 50 years in jail.
But she'd be killed under your plan.
Huh?
As a drug dealer.
No. Under that, it would depend on the severity. It would depend on the severity.
You should know what your policies are, buddy. If you're gonna advocate for people to be murdered for being drug dealers, you should remember that actually, because that's actually kind of like a big thing, a big position to take. And undercuts your, I'm totally humane. I allowed Alice Johnson, who was imprisoned for decades. It was totally unjust. Letting her out was a good thing to do. But then calling for people like her to instead be murdered by the state is a bad thing. And one would think that if you had been pushing for that, as Trump has, year after year, that you would remember it and you wouldn't have to be reminded live during an interview. That the thing is, Mondale, and I want your take on this. He's not gonna back down from that position. He's gonna try to nuance it around the edges. We'll have more video, but what do you think about what you saw?
Man, that was beautiful. It was just like I enjoy the fact that this hypocrisy is not just Trump, right? This is Republican on its face. We had Rush Limbaugh do the same thing, talk about drug dealership, be shot, and then he get busted with 70,000 pills that he had no prescriptions for. So like I it's always the case that the loudest people against something are probably suffering from that something. And I don't find it too hilarious that Trump is comfortable going on TV saying that people who are selling drugs should be shot or murdered. But then he tried to win points with the black community by freeing a black woman who was over sentenced. This is the disgusting part of Donald Trump that is so dangerous, because people will miss the point. And some of those people, unfortunately, look like me in the world.
Yeah, who might see what he did with Alice Johnson and think, oh, that's a good thing. And it was, she should have been released way before then, but not realize that like that symbolic thing that he does and then references once years later is a little bit undercut by a systemic policy that would result in lots of people being killed. So that said, I want to give you more of their little back and forth directly from when he's reminded with the fact that he would have killed Alice Johnson. Take a look at this.
It would depend on the severity. She's technically a former drug dealer. She had multi-million dollar cocaine ring.
Any drug dealer, look.
So even Alice Johnson in that ad.
She can't do it, okay? By the way, if that was there, no, she wouldn't be killed. It would start as of now, so you wouldn't go to the
past. No, but your policy.
No, but starting now, yeah.
Starting now. Are you a child? Look, he says, I did a good thing. It was humane. I allowed this woman out. They were being unjust by locking her up for a really long time. And his solution is still to kill her under the policy. I mean, not her, because the policy wasn't around back then. But he's not backtracking and saying, that's a good point. Let's not do that. He's just saying, oh, future Alice Johnson, sure, starting now. Yes, they would be murdered by the state, but old Alice Johnson, she wouldn't have, because that was before. That is his actual ideological defense of this policy, that we should still be killing people, but don't worry about this example that I gave. She's grandfathered in to not be killed by the United States government. Mondale, are you convinced?
No, I'm not convinced at all. And actually, if you see his anger is at when he said not her, or she wouldn't have been killed then because it would happen before. He's basically saying, don't take away my arm or my tag or my carrot that I'm dangling to these Negroes. Please don't kill that. Like, this is my arm into the Negro community. This time I'm gonna win the black vote. This and Lil Wayne. So I think, you know, Donald Trump's anger has nothing to do with this person. He didn't even remember her name. If you go back to the first clip, you'll notice that Brett had to throw him a. She was a woman until Brett had to say her name. He couldn't even say her name because he didn't remember it. It's showing people that Donald Trump does not care about policy. He's not concerned with policies. He's all about power, and he'll use anybody to get that power.
Yeah. Well, look, he's gonna take one more crack, I think, at trying to explain this away. Let's take a look.
She wouldn't have done it if it was death penalty. In other words, if it was death penalty, she wouldn't have been on that phone call. She wouldn't have been a dealer. Now, she wasn't much of a dealer because she was sort of like, I mean, honestly, she got treated terribly. She was treated sort of like I get treated. But Brett, she was treated very unfairly. But she got 48 years, and that was bad.
That was bad. That was unjust. Getting no years because you're not alive anymore, I guess, is more just according to him, because that is his actual solution to the problem. Spending time in prison would be unjust, so we are going to kill you. We're going to electrocute you. We're going to hang you. We're going to shoot you. We're going to gas you. We're going to poison you. We're going to do something. We're going to stuff out your life. Because our movement, which says we're suspicious of government power, believes that government should have the ultimate power to decide who lives and who dies, and that's consistent for some reason. That is his thing. He tries to distract a little bit with, well, she wouldn't have done it. And you know how little confidence he has in that argument, because then he tries to distract you with, but she was treated badly, like I was treated bad. He goes off on this little fun little tangent, a little fantasy tangent. But the argument that you do not need to worry about how wildly, wickedly immoral it is to murder someone for selling marijuana, because don't worry, they wouldn't do it. Because there's the death penalty, and obviously, if there's the death penalty, then people won't do it. Which is why, by the way, nobody commits any of the crimes that currently can get you the death penalty. You know, like murder and things like that. Nobody murders anybody because there's the death penalty. Is this making sense to everyone? It's easy logic. I don't know what problem you're having with following this, but Mondale, what do you think?
Listen, the death penalty has never been a deterrent for crime. We see that, we've been seeing it, every study shows that. Furthermore, Donald Trump is more concerned with him. This is why he needs to, if she was being treated like him, she wouldn't be in jail. This guy is out right now on his own reconnaissance, no bail. This guy's out on his own for treason charges. He's not even spent a day in jail for treason charges. Nobody's being treated like you. He's getting the golden glove treatment even through the criminal justice system, and no black person is getting that. It also should be pointed out that it was not marijuana that she was selling. It was actually cocaine, right? Yeah. She was a cocaine drug dealer. I think people should know that. And we should talk about that, to be honest, because like you said, even cocaine does not merit someone spending 48 years in prison. So I agree that letting her free was the right thing to do, but we should name what it was. And I think Donald Trump likes to downplay the drug in order to make it seem like he did something that was nonviolent. And I think, you know, I have problems with this, because I've heard through my work, not as the mayor, but as Black Male Voter Project founder, people using this Donald Trump talking point about him letting this black person out of prison and nobody else doing it. And I'm thinking it is a dangerous talking point that Trump might have tied into that he can use again in 2024 to do damage.
Yeah, it's amazing that would be persuasive to people. Like a little bit, sure. Like we said, it was a good thing to do. But the idea that thus you should ignore everything else that he does seems crazy. I mean, look, I also think to the extent that it is a moral good, and I think it was to do it, then yeah, Biden should be, like, it should be a more pervasive thing. I know that Obama in his final, you know, period as president released a lot of people, many for similar sorts of things. I would love to know why Alice Johnson wasn't caught up in that. Seems weird, but anyway, it's amazing that this would be persuasive to people. And while we're having a little bit of fun, you know, responding to these videos, because he's just so bad at even mild pushback against the positions that he's taken when you remind him of those. Let's also bear in mind, he has been saying this for years. He plausibly would do this were he to become president. People would be executed. Like, this is the Philippines, like this is like China, North Korea, for selling drugs, marijuana, legal in some places now. I'm sitting in a place where I could go, I could like toss to Mondale and then run and go buy some. He does think that people should be killed for that. And he'll say it's to protect lives. He'll pitch himself as being the moral one because people die as a result of what drug dealers do, ignoring the fact that the reason that there is so much violence around the drug trade is specifically because it is illegal. It requires secrecy. There's huge amounts of unregulated money to be made. Were you to instead legalize and control it, then that sort of thing wouldn't happen. There's not a lot of crime around the sale of beer these days because it's not an underground thing. Again, like Mondale, do you ever get sick of having to point out things that are obviously the case, but nobody on the other side cares at all about?
I mean, at all, John. And also, don't forget, I mean, you're a couple states away from a state where every drug is legal. Oregon, right? Like in Oregon, you can get it all. And nobody's special, but it's also one of the whitest states in the union. So Trump don't want to talk about that. Or probably he probably don't even know that fact. So I think here's the problem. We live in a state now, when I was talking about a state from the United States of America, where politics is about false or whatever you can make people feel. It has nothing to do with facts. It has nothing to do with like being an adult or about real compromise. And right now, Trump, and I tell people all the time, we should not downplay where he is. I feel like this interview with Brett should be damning enough to make this man disqualified for anything from dog catcher to the White House. But instead, Trump is gonna find a way to flip this and make Brett some kind of liberal hero. And then all of a sudden, he's gonna be fundraising off of Brett and Fox News, and he'll score points in a poll from this and be back on his way to the White House if we're not careful.
Look, I think a lot of Republicans already believe that Brett Baer is at best suspect. They don't consider him to be, you know, a true believer like Tucker Carlson or something like that. What we played so far, I don't think is gonna hurt him that much. I think that Republicans either won't watch it or won't care. But we're gonna turn now to a topic where maybe Trump could do a little bit of damage to himself. Donald Trump wants credit. That could be the end of the sentence, by the way. In general, he just wants credit for things. But he also wants credit for things that are both good, true, but really unpopular on the right. And even though he knows better than to ask for credit for some things, he still has to because he's so desperate. Take a look at this.
On COVID, in your mind, did the COVID vaccine work? It's such an interesting question because not only that, I also did the Regenerons of the world, you know, the whole, well, we did a tremendous job on that. But we had a vaccine. Now you have difference, you have different COVIDs. You had COVID-19 and then you have different strange COVIDs. But we had original was COVID-19, which was the roughest one. So I have a Democrat friend who's very smart. Hopefully he votes for me, but he's very smart. He said, I don't understand one thing about you. I watch your rallies, they're incredible. You talk about beating ISIS, you talk about taxes, you talk about regulation, you talk about everything. But you never said that, I've never heard you talk about how the incredible job you did with the vaccines, because as you know,
I got them done in 9 months, and it was supposed to take anywhere from 5 to 12 years. I broke their ass.
I wanted to end there because that's just an amazing thing for a president to say. And it's a great thing for him to brag about, because it is in part true. The vaccines were developed while Trump was president. He did put government money into their development. So there's a base layer of truth to it. But beyond that, it is wild exaggeration, both in terms of how the vaccines were actually deployed, as well as this Democrat friend of his. Oh, you have a Democrat friend who says you don't get enough credit for things and your rallies are really awesome. Did the Democrat friend, who, by the way, he's a big guy, huge guy, comes in the room, tears in his eyes. He says, why don't you ask for credit for this? I bet that guy exists. That's what I bet is happening. But anyway, he wants credit on the vaccine. Before we jump into our conversation, though, this is a thing that he has talked about. The idea that he's never asked for credit for is ridiculous on its face. But he doesn't talk about it that much anymore. And there's honestly a reason for that, which they go into.
And he said, you may have saved in the world, throughout the world, 100 million people, and you never talk about it. I said, I really don't want to talk about it, because as a Republican, it's not a great thing to talk about, because for some reason, it's just not.
For some reason?
Yeah, for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, for some reason, for some. There's a reason. It's some, I don't know. That's weird. We shouldn't think about it too much. We shouldn't try to come up with what that reason is about why he would feel uncomfortable talking about the vaccine, why it would get a negative reaction. I don't know, Mondale. Some reason. Because he saved 100 million people, his Democrat friend says, and yet he doesn't brag about it, except for on televised interviews like right then. He doesn't brag about it. So what? Why is that? What is that reason, man? That's weird.
Listen, he's so humble. Why would a humble man like Donald Trump brag about anything? A man so humble that he would only put his name on top of the tallest buildings with the gold letters. That man would never brag about saving 100 millions of people. Come on, let's get serious. Donald Trump is absolutely disgusting. First of all, the first strand of COVID, not the first brand or whatever he called it, many different COVIDs. It was not the deadliest. Delta was the deadliest COVID. And we know that it caused a more severe disease than any other strand. And that is not even close to like, hey, that is not even novel information. Everybody should know that, because we saw how many people were dying from Delta. But Trump was too busy thinking that you need an ID to go to a grocery store, because he's so detached from the world. Here's the sad part about what we just watched. We just watched a person who, like you said, can take a little bit of truth and turn it into a political issue and mix it up so bad. Trump actually says that COVID worked. The vaccination worked. And he's not talking about it, which means he can put the death, all of the rumors on, or a lot of it on his side, all of the misinformation around COVID that killed so many people, but he's not willing to say it because Republicans don't like the idea of him talking about or bragging about vaccines. Yeah. Because now on the Republican side, if you say you're vaccinated, if you have vaccinations, then you're a Martian. So Trump don't want to side with us Martians, even though he took the vaccine himself.
Yeah.
And yeah. Drinking hydrochlorine or whatever.
Hydroxychloroquine. Yeah. So, I mean, look, that is amazing. The idea that he saved 100 million people, like, I don't think that would be true. And if it were true, I think we should reserve 1-2% of the credit for the scientists who created the vaccine, you know, as a treat. Let's give them a little bit of credit, and not just the guy who happened to be president when they were developed. But think about the claim that he's making and why Republicans would be so mad. Not just generally that he talks about the vaccine and everything, but the claim that he made right there. He said he saved 100 million people. For that to be true, you know what else needs to be true? COVID needs to be wildly deadly and dangerous. A serious thing demanding serious action. That's what would have to be true. But conservatives do not want to accept that. They do not want to admit that it's deadly. I don't think it's as deadly as he's making it out to be, but it would be devastating. Millions more people would be dead if not for the vaccine. Probably not 100 million, but several million, definitely, because of how uniquely deadly it was across the world, and they will not accept that. Now that said, there's a little bit more to this conversation. Let's see if he can do a little bit more damage to himself in the eyes of the most insane MAGA people in the country with this.
Because people love the vaccines and people hate the vaccines, but conservatives aren't. And I understand both sides of it, by the way. I understand both sides very well. What I didn't do is the mandates. The mandates and the vaccines don't go. And you had these governors mandating. Well, and by the way, Ron DeSantis,
the Pentagon did.
Ron DeSantis had lines of people trying to get the vaccine. He set up whole things. You know, when I never saw a guy that could forget the past so quickly, because the past wasn't that long ago. You have a lot of people. There are people that say I saved 100 million lives. I don't even talk about it.
That's my favorite sentence at the end. That I saved 100 million and you'd never know it from me. It's an amazing thing to say. But the more of that quote, I think it's really good. He says, you know, some people love it, some people hate it, but conservatives, he trails off and then he moves on to something else. Because he can't explain what's really going on. He says, I understand both sides of it. And that is true. He does understand both sides of it. The politics of both sides of it. Whether he understands anything beyond just that he's not supposed to say that he likes vaccines because the right has been trained to hate them, I don't know. But I really wish, while Bret Baier did, I think, an overall, Mondale, a good job in that interview, I would have loved to have been able to ask some follow-ups there. Because if you understand the substance of both sides, then there's a bit of an issue there for Donald Trump, because you're saying that vaccine saved 100 million people. The right is saying it's murdering people, it's killing people left and right, it's immoral, it's satanic, it's a plot by Bill Gates, it's evil. It's killing people, it's wiping people out. Every celebrity who dies, dies because of the vaccine. That's what they're saying. Donald Trump, are they right? The vaccine that you're saying was amazing, an amazing achievement that you don't get enough credit for, is it secretly killing every celebrity? Because you can't have it both ways. You really can't. He wants to politically play it both ways, and unfortunately, Bret Baier played ball with that. He allowed him to brag about it and then didn't force him to point out that the right is wrong, that they were lied to by right-wing grifters, right-wing politicians played along with it. There is a cost to be paid for how anti-science and anti-vaccine specifically the right has become. There weren't enough follow-ups about that, Mondale, and that was frustrating. I liked a lot of the interview, but that really sucked.
Yeah, that last line that you said was your favorite just sounded like something that followed. We are the knights that say nay. Like, we say that. It just felt like that was the perfect follow up to that line. Uh-huh. Like, it is that ridiculous. I mean, like, Donald Trump is Monty Python of our politics of presidents, right? Listen, here's the sad part about it, right? We know there's something even deeper at play here. I mean, Republicans won't even say that COVID is real. Donald Trump is saying he saved 100 million lives. From what? From what? I mean, your conservatives are saying COVID isn't real. Everybody's dying. They're saying that these people have died anyway from old age, from being overweight, from sickness, or from cancer. And they're just saying that we're just marking these people dead because of COVID. So Donald Trump, like you said, can't have it both ways. Either people are dying from COVID because it is a serious virus, or it's not. Yeah. And either way, it seems like Republicans are gonna have something to do, like dance on a tightrope as they how they support Donald Trump's stance, because his stance now sounds like our stance, a normal stance, that COVID really was killing millions of people across this country, across this world, and also the vaccine saved hundreds of millions of lives, according to Donald Trump. So I can't understand how Republicans defend this, but I'm certain they got a tightrope that they can do.
Yeah, I mean, look, admittedly, it's kind of like an evolution of the thing that we've been dealing with for a couple of years now, where the right, which, as you say, says COVID is not a serious thing, it's not a dangerous thing, it's not nearly as dangerous as the vaccine, it's so undangerous that we don't have to do anything to stop it. Like, I'm not even talking about vaccines. I don't have to wear a mask, I don't have to socially distance, I don't have to stay at home, I don't have to do anything, and that's fine because it's not bad. Also, it's a Chinese bioweapon that they unleashed to kill all of us at the exact same time. It is a horrendous international war on humanity, and we should ignore it. It doesn't matter at all. And I fear now, because now we're more than 3 years out in the pandemic, that the hypocrisy, that sort of insane, utterly irrational hypocrisy that came up during the pandemic, I'm mentally never going to be able to understand how we as a society or individuals individually did that. And at least the people watching the show now, you know what I'm talking about. But assuming that I don't get fired or whatever, I'm gonna be doing this in 20 years and still talking about that, because that was the defining moment of our age, I think. If you could convince millions and millions of people to willingly get and die from a virus as a political stance, then what can't you convince them to do? And we've seen since then, you could convince them to believe a lot of crazy stuff about vaccines and about Satanism and about pedophilia and about whatever you want. All of the limits, all the breaks were gone once they did that. Any final thoughts, Mondale, before we move on?
What you just pointed out made my mind run and think, like, what is possible when you can convince some people to believe something that is unbelievable? And I think that's how we got the institution of racialized slavery, right? Like, when you tell this many people that these people aren't human, and then people start believing it, it seems like this list begins to grow, and we could do anything, like rape these people, have kids by these people, and still say they're not human. So you're saying you're having sex with something that's subhuman. But I digress. But I think yeah. You know, so what you talk about is the marking time of our time, or point of our time, reminded me of something that this country has done before with slavery.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. Yeah, so the pandemic, I think, is the thing of our era. But yeah, there have definitely been bigger and more consequential lies that were accepted in the past. That's totally true. Okay, with that said, we're gonna take our first break. We come back, lots more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. New reporting on SCOTUS corruption just dropped. And what is Clarence Thomas up to now? Wait, hold up, he's not actually the one. Clarence Thomas gets a pass today. I mean, I'm sure he's up to terrible stuff. But for today, we're gonna be focusing on Samuel Alito. ProPublica certainly has. They've continued their amazing streak of critical reporting on the SCOTUS with this. Here's what Samuel Alito has been up to. In early July 2008, he stood in a riverbank in a remote corner of Alaska. Oh, doesn't that sound nice? The Supreme Court justice was on a vacation at a luxury fishing lodge that charges more than $1,000 a day. He caught a king salmon nearly the size of his leg. And then he posed for a picture. We can actually show you the picture. To his left, a man stands beaming. Paul Singer, a hedge fund billionaire who has repeatedly asked the Supreme Court to rule in his favor in high stakes business disputes. And oh, didn't they have fun? Their expensive fishing trip. They both caught big fish. So Singer actually flew Alito to Alaska on a private jet. If Alito had chartered the plane himself, it would have cost more than $100,000 each way. So that is an expensive trip. Arguably, you could have just bought the fish and saved yourself a lot of trouble. Notably, Alito did not go on to report this trip on his annual financial disclosures. It just slipped his mind, I guess. I don't know. By failing to disclose the private jet flight, he appears to have violated a federal law that requires justices to disclose most gifts. That's according to ethics law experts. And let me just say, I appreciate those ethics law experts, as well as ProPublica, acting like any of that matters. It's technically true that they violated these, doesn't matter, nothing's gonna happen about it. But isn't it fun to pretend that it might? So those weren't the only two people on the trip. Leonard Leo, longtime leader of the Federalist Society, attended and helped organize the fishing trip. Leo actually asked the billionaire Singer to join, and asked Singer if he and Alito could fly in the billionaire's jet. Leo had recently played an important role in the justice's confirmation to the court. So you get the future corruption of ruling on cases involving the billionaire after hanging out with him and accepting a gift worth well over $100,000. You're being sort of paid off by the guy who helped get you onto the court in the first place. It's an amazing tangled web, isn't it? So here's the issue. In the years that followed that fun fishing trip, Singer's hedge fund came before the court at least 10 times in cases where his role was often covered by the legal press and mainstream media. In 2014, just 6 years after the trip, the court agreed to resolve a key issue in a decade-long battle between Singer's hedge fund and the nation of Argentina. Alito did not recuse himself. He voted with the majority 7-1 in Singer's favor. The hedge fund was ultimately paid $2.4 billion. Now, granted, it was 7-1, so presumably, if we're assuming that Alito is the only one who has a financial conflict of interest here, then it might have gone 6-2, maybe. Does this mean that we shouldn't care? I mean, this is just one of the many times that his hedge fund came before the court. What do you think about this, Mondale?
I don't know. I mean, like, what was his influence on the other justices? What was his what was Alito saying to the other justices? How did he you know preside over this case? We don't know. I think what's disgusting here is I'm trying to figure out what kind of bait do you use at $1,000 a day fishing lodge? I know what kind of bait you use. You use American voters. You use the court system. That's what kind of bait you use. I mean, come on, guys. Like, this is absolutely disgusting to this point where we're literally at the point now where America cannot say we have a democracy anymore, right? We do not have a democracy. If this was happening in any other country, we'll be trying to send in CIA agents to disrupt their government. we'll be trying to say that this is unstable, right? So how is this acceptable in this country? And like you said, it is so funny that we read this article and think maybe there are some repercussions. And we know all he's gonna do is go back and amend his 2008 taxes or federal forms and say, oh yeah, by the way, I took this $100,000 a year trip or $100,000 trip for a week or two, and that's it. There's no consequences to this behavior. This is absolutely disgusting, and there's no blind justice when we see this happening. This is money paying for access at its core.
Yeah, I just, like, I'm glad that there are still reporters who are looking into this sort of stuff. I also think it is amazing that we had like a solid 2 months of these Clarence Thomas updates going on. And we found out about other stuff too. And the entire time, Sam Alito is just like, wonder to find out about my fishing trip. And now I'm wondering, what about the other trips? I mean, I don't know for sure that there are other trips, but we didn't know about the fishing trip last week. Are we to assume that that's the only one? He gets invited on this like super expensive fishing trip, and then everybody just goes on about their lives. They never cross paths again, never touch base again, no talks or anything. Okay, maybe we'll find out, but we will not find out from Samuel Alito. That's what I feel confident about. I'm just gonna read one comment from Samuel Alito, because when he found out apparently that this report was gonna come out, he wrote an op-ed to try to get out in front of it for the Wall Street Journal. And he says, ProPublica suggests that my failure to recuse in these cases created an appearance of impropriety, but that is incorrect. My recollection is that I have spoken to Mr. Singer on no more than a handful of occasions. On no occasion have we discussed the activities of his businesses, and we have never talked about any case or issue before the court. Okay, so look, there's a couple different ways to look at this. So the first is maybe he's lying. That's, I think, a plausible thing that we should consider. After all, he hadn't told us about this trip. He could have come forward willingly when the Clarence Thomas stuff was coming out and offered up this information. He chose not to, so there's already cause to not believe what he says or his willingness to make sure that you understand the truth. The other would be, do you need to have detailed, constant conversations with people who are already paying you off? Do you need to do that to know which way you're supposed to rule in these sorts of things? And the other is, if you don't know this guy, you never talk to him, why are you accepting $100,000 private plane flights from him? Isn't that a little bit weird? Like, let's say that from Alito's point of view, he doesn't believe he did anything wrong. He doesn't think that it's a little bit weird that the guy would offer the trip. You might think that you're an angelic being floating above ethical concerns and the plausibility of conflicts of interest, but why is the billionaire obviously trying to influence you? Whether it's successful or not is an interesting question, but that is what he is doing. Or at the very least, you should suspect that that might be what he's doing, and you seemingly have no problem with it whatsoever. Mondale, any other thoughts?
I mean, just real quick, I think, listen, this idea, the way he started this up, man, like saying ProPublica suggests that there may be an appearance of impropriety. Nope, they don't suggest it. Absolutely is, bro. Like, you can't understand impropriety that much at the Supreme Court. Come on, guys, let's be serious. You flew on a $100,000 trip within the United States. Sure, it wasn't the lower 48, but you were still in the United States, and it cost $100,000 to fly there one way. Yeah. One way. Come on, guys. Like, and also, by the way, you caught a fish the size of your leg. Like, I'm sorry, dude. Like, I'm being funny, but I'm being facetious. But let's be serious. There's impropriety written all over this. This guy's been, his cases has been all over your court for $1 billion settlements, And and you on $100,000 a year trip? Come on, let's be serious. He took you on this trip because he knew there could be some influence, or at least he thought. And you know that too, as a Supreme Court justice. This is absolutely fish talk.
I like that. Yeah, by the way, man, they sure know how to waste money, rich people. If you spend $100,000 on a plane trip, you should get to keep the plane, I think, personally. Anyway, let's move on to other news. Why don't we tee it up with a little throwback bit of video
of Ruby Freeman and Shay Freeman Morris and one other gentleman, quite obviously, surreptitiously passing around USB ports as if they're vials of heroin or cocaine.
You remember that? Rudy Giuliani spreading that conspiracy theory about election fraud in the wake of the 2020 election, sprinkling a little bit of casual racism onto there as well. See, that was during a long-term ongoing campaign to take two Georgia election workers who he referenced in that video and make them out to be villains, because they are pitching a conspiracy theory, this plot to steal the election from Donald Trump, and conspiracy theories need villains. And so they found them. Two people, Shay Moss, Ruby Freeman as well, and said that they were somehow responsible for this. They were part of this elite plot to deny Donald Trump his second term in office. And as a result of that, they suffered. They were attacked constantly by many, many people, their reputations utterly destroyed, thanks to elite plots like you saw there from Rudy Giuliani. Well, fast forward to now, turns out there was a big investigation into whether they had done any of what was being alleged about them. And no, of course, they had not. They faced threats of violence, though, for a couple of years while we were waiting for the results of this investigation, conspiracy theorists talking about them constantly. But now the Georgia Elections Board, their investigators interviewed a social media user who admitted he created a fake account, confirmed the content that was posted in the account was fake. They looked into the claims of USB drives being handed back and forth. No, it was not a USB drive. It was a ginger mint, as was said at the time. But now with so many people on the right, we'll have just moved on. Do they even care about these two women whose lives they ruined for years? Does Rudy Giuliani even remember doing that interview? One of the many court cases that he lost in the wake of the 2020 election. This is how it works. You take these people, whether it's Rudy Giuliani, libs of TikTok, you make a temporary villain out of these people. You allow the mob, the piranha, to shred them. And then you just move on to fresh meat the next day. But their lives are still ruined, Mondale.
Yeah, this is absolutely disgusting, and I think this video in itself is enough to have, should be enough to have him disbarred. But I think, you know, the sad part about it is the media don't even remember these. I think it was a mother and a daughter's name, and now they're, like you said, they had to move. They were getting death threats, and this type of stuff is damning for the long term for these people. People who were working as poll workers, already we know they're either volunteering or underpaid for sure. And they were overworked in Georgia because most of the cases, the lines were 8, 9, 10, and 12 hours in some cases in that state. So we're talking about people doing a great service to the public being demonized to the point where they're getting death threats because of conspiracy theories that are grounded in nothing but someone creating a fake profile online. And that is absolutely disgusting to me.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And they just send the mob at people. And the idea that the way that they targeted, you know, Shay Moss, Ruby Freeman, many others in other states as well, is obviously making it harder to get people to do this incredibly important volunteer work. And that's part of the plan. They don't care if that makes it much harder to run the elections. If the fact that you don't have enough volunteers results in really long lines and really long waits, that just feeds into their conspiracy theories. They can use that to argue that the election is being stolen. When they pull voting machines out of areas, thus artificially extending the waits, they point to that as a sign that that area can't run the elections, even though they're the ones that cause that. All of this is so convenient for them to continue to spread lies. And all of it rather than just actually trying to win elections. But anyway, I think that it's important that we remind people of some of the victims that are made along the way. And this was a particularly disgusting case of this. With that said, we do need to take a break. When we come back though, a little bit of good news coming out of a court. How novel, after this. Okay, everybody, we've had some pretty tough news, some bad news. Let's turn now to a little bit of at least brief good news. Just yesterday, a federal judge in Arkansas struck down the state's law banning medical treatments for children and teenagers seeking gender transitions. So gender affirming care for younger people had been banned under a new law that has now been struck down. This is the beginning, I think, or the continuation, at least for now, of a trend that we are seeing where some of these laws, these culture war laws that have been passed by Republicans, banning books, banning medical interventions, banning abortion, are being successfully challenged. Now, this is not the end of the process for any of these individual things, that they're gonna be appealed, they're gonna move their way up, and we do, after all, have an incredibly radically conservative Supreme Court. So bear all of that in mind, but at least now, we can, I think, be happy. We have some good news. So let me give you some more details. Judge James Moody Jr. said that the law both discriminated against transgender people and violated the constitutional rights of doctors. He also said that the state of Arkansas had failed to substantially prove a number of its claims, including that the care was experimental or carelessly prescribed to teenagers, the sorts of casual claims made by transphobes that are almost never backed up by any actual science. Says specifically, rather than protecting children or safeguarding medical ethics, the evidence showed that the prohibited medical care improves the mental health and well-being of patients, and that by prohibiting it, the state undermined the interests it claims to be advancing. Further, the various claims underlying the state's arguments that the act protects children and safeguards medical ethics do not explain why only gender-affirming medical care and all gender-affirming medical care is singled out for prohibition. And that's a good point. We, of course, understand the reasoning. Is that it has nothing to do with doctors or care or children or anything like that. It is part of an explicitly transphobic war to distract the right wing from other issues and make them think about politics through the almost singular lens of they're coming for my kids and they're trying to trans them. But anyway, Mondale, what do you think about this?
I am so excited about Moody's decision, mainly because I literally started watching this this issue when I saw on the problem with John Stewart, the attorney general from Arkansas, talking about why they needed to do this law and they had absolutely no facts. And he was hitting them with the idea that every doctor is saying what you're doing is wrong. And it was like, well, but we talked to experts, and she's like, what experts? And he was like, oh, preachers or something, people with no medical history. And he just kept saying, that's not facts. Like that's your belief. And it's fine, but it's not fine to impose on other people's children, especially when you're trying to do those kids harm. And that's exactly what you're doing when you're denying these kids' rights. And then when he asked the number of trans kids, and they had no data to support anything. They didn't know how many trans kids were in the state. They felt the need to do this law. So it was absolutely targeting trans folk. And I am super excited about what this leads us. And hopefully this conversation, people forget a lot of the time that Arkansas was the last southern state to turn red, right? So hopefully it's not the last state to go back blue. And I hope this too is on that path of changing like some of what's possible in that state.
Yeah. Yeah, great point. Like they're very often they know nothing about the actual issue. I mean, the fact that so many red states do it within a space of a few months should imply that this is not about actual issues being addressed at the state level. It's about feeling, oh, they're doing it over there. Oh, you're not an actual conservative unless you do this. I guess we'll do it. I guess this is my entire personality and ideology now. That's all it is. And in related issues too, I think it was the governor of North Dakota was announcing their ban on trans participation in high school sports and like gave a speech about it. And the only references to individual trans athletes were from other states. They couldn't point to a single trans athlete in their state, but they're passing laws and doing press conferences to announce them. It's not about the actual issue. But anyway, a little bit of good news, glad to see. Also, if you needed to feel a little bit better about this story, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is mad about it. She tweeted, this is not care, it's activists pushing a political agenda. Well, you would never stand for that. No, the right would never be a party to activists pushing for an agenda like all the Republican states passing these bans simultaneously or anything. Anyway, they're gonna be appealing it, no surprise there.
Yeah, or John, or even the fact that she is literally going against the federal government and decreed to stop kicking people off Medicaid. And since May, she's kicked off of more than 140,000 people off Medicaid, and they're literally about to have an entire state of people that are uninsured. Not because they don't qualify for Medicaid anymore, but because they didn't return a form, or because they forgot to say how much their ex makes. And this is absolutely disgusting for her to talk about care at all.
100%. Okay, let's move on to our last topic for this first hour. It's a brief one, but I thought that you should know about it. I think we all understand at this point that Twitter is perhaps the last bastion for radical free speech. You can say whatever you want, and you're not gonna get like the boot of the man on your neck or anything. Unless you wanted to say the word cis or cisgender. Did you know that those are slurs now? I, like many people, found that out today. There's this guy, James Essis, who had tweeted yesterday after posting a tweet saying that I reject the word cis and don't wish to be called it. I receive a slew of messages from trans activists calling me sissy and telling me that I am cis whether or not I like it. Just imagine if the roles were reversed. Well, because James Essis is whining about trans people and pays $8 a month to the richest man in the world, he gets live instantaneous customer service from the richest man in the world, who replied to him, repeated targeted harassment against any account will cause the harassing accounts to receive at minimum temporary suspensions. The words cis and cisgender are considered slurs on this platform. To which James Essis says, thank you for standing up for reality, Elon. I don't know what James thinks that statement means. How is this a stance for reality? The words exist, they've been around a while, and whether you like them being applied to you or not, they do apply. They do. That's the reality. Words have meanings, and it's not necessarily always up to you. Now, if you don't want people to be sending the words sissy to you, I understand that. If you don't want people to bombard you with the word cis, accurate though it is, then I understand that. After all, I generally think that you should refer to people the way that they like. But the idea that on this bastion of free speech, you cannot use medical words like cis or cisgender in relation to people if they whine enough about it to a right-wing billionaire, that seems to undercut the free speech thing just a little bit for me, Mondale, but what do you think?
I'm confused. A slur is a word that will harm someone's like character or their like their standing in society. A slur is a name that's used to meant to harm folk. I mean, like cis and cisgender are not slurs. And the idea, to take a name or a book from Ron DeSantis, this is the anti-woke mob again, mad that we're not sleep about life. This is the anti-woke mob at their business.
Yeah, it's the thing about Elon Musk, we were talking about this in the production meeting, like it's impossible to pin him down on what his politics is. You know what? He's an enigma, really. He's a mystery. You don't know. Some people say that he's right wing, but you don't know that. You don't know that. I mean, he takes all sorts of different positions. He responds to all sorts of different people online. And when I look over people with blue checks online, I can't tell if they have anything in common. They just represent a wide swath of humanity. All of this is ridiculous. But you want something more ridiculous? The Rabbit Hole, an account that pays $8 a month to the richest man in the world, tweeted out, it's true. We had a poll on this. Sample size was over 50K. Is cis a slur? Which is a ridiculous thing to say, to imply that that's a sample size for a Twitter poll from a right winger. But what makes it even more ridiculous is genius billionaire Elon Musk replies, people overwhelmingly reject this obvious slur that bigots are trying to impose. What in the hell is going on? He doesn't even need to pretend to have a functioning brain anymore. These are not new words. I know that people are claiming that, because his chat, his messages are filled with people like this Katie Savage. It's a slur, a contemptuous word meant to demean people who are normal. I get that you think it's bad or whatever. It just has a definition. It means that your gender identity lines up with your sex assigned at birth. It's not a moral thing. It's not a judgment. It's just a word, and words are true. Like, word definitions don't care about your feelings is how I would probably place that if I were a right-wing grifter. But anyway, we're gonna talk a little bit more about this perhaps on the other side of the aftermath. We're up against our timeline, but thank you everybody for listening the first hour. We'll be back with more after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.